Okay, good evening everybody. It is 6:30, so I will make a start. Welcome to the meeting of the Cabinet on Monday the 14th of September. So item number one is to receive apologies for absence. Andrea?
Thank you, Chairman. We've received apologies from Councillor Ashcroft and Cabinet Support Member.
Thank you. Okay, item number two is declarations of interest. Are there any declarations of interest in respect of the items on the agenda for this evening? No? Okay, thank you very much. So item number three is to approve as a correct record the minutes of the meeting held on the 13th of July 2020. I would like to propose those. May I have a second? Thank you, Councillor Peters. Does anybody have any questions on the minutes? No? Okay. In which case, all in favour? Okay, that is unanimous amongst the Cabinet members eligible to vote, so I will sign those at a point at which I can. So item number four is to consider any urgent business brought forward to the meeting under Rule 12. I don't believe there is any urgent business. Okay, so item number five is the forward plan.
Thank you, Leader. This is the forward plan from the 1st of September through to the 31st of December this year, very last day of the year. Happy to take any questions on the forward plan.
Thank you, Chief Executive. Councillor Faulkner.
Thank you, Leader. In the forward plan document that I've received, it states that it's dated from the 1st of December 2020. As you just said, Chief Executive, it should be the 1st of September 2020.
I think you're right, Councillor Faulkner. I think that's referred to on page 2 in the banner, isn't it? Somebody was getting carried away when they were typing the 31st of December by the looks of things. Proves it ever.
Okay.
Informed document.
We will have that amended and updated on the public record as appropriate. Obviously, in terms of the items with the expected date for decision for September, several of those are on the agenda for this evening. I'm happy to confirm that I have signed the executive decision record for the award of the insurance contracts at the end of last week, and that the statement of accounts were approved by the Scrutiny, Audit and Value for Money Services Committee, subject to the final sign-off delegated to the chair of the committee. We will move on to item number six, which is the procurement policy, and we will pause for a moment for James Abbott, who will be presenting the report and to be brought into the meeting. Good evening, James. We are on item number six, the procurement policy, so you proceed.
Thanks, Leader, and good evening all. So, procurement policy. In recent years, the Council has had in place a sequence of procurement strategies which we've worked hard on delivering to get the principles of procurement and approaches for good practice well embedded within the authority. And the work we've done over the years suggests that we're now in a good place in terms of our overall procurement approach, and having a robust approach is, of course, essential, certainly when you consider that we spend in the region of around £10 million a year on a range of supplies and services and works from the external market. So, building on the good work that's gone before, it's now time for a procurement policy, which we've attached as Appendix 1 to the report. And this allows us to tighten up on the operational specifics of the approach that we've got embedded, and to provide a steer to budget managers to enable them to build on those good practices that we've already got in place in a way that complements the contract procedure rules as well as the financial regulations that, of course, form part of the Council's constitution. So the Council takes the approach of devolved responsibility for procurement. So in other words, service and budget manager are ultimately responsible for their own budgets and therefore should be responsible for the purchases that go hand in hand with their budget areas. So the policy really has two main purposes, which are to define those various responsibilities carefully to encourage the appropriate ownership of any procurement process, as well as ensuring that everything that needs to be thought about in a process is thought about by that budget manager and any stakeholder involved in making any particular purchase. So to do that, the policy considers procurement in a way that encompasses what we refer to as the full life cycle of an asset or a service contract, from the initial definition of the business need right the way through to the end of the useful life of a contract in a holistic way that's intended to build that circular culture of continuous improvement throughout a procurement and contract process. So the policy goes on to show the details of the various stages of that process, of that life cycle, and this sets things out in an operational context across the differing processes that can be followed, dependent on the contract value of a particular procurement. And the policy also draws together all the relevant aspects around governance, which of course complement the contract procedure rules in the Constitution, aspects relating to openness and transparency, the specific sections relating to risk and fraud management, to give people a steer across what's of course a broad range of things that they need to be mindful of in a procurement approach from across the Council. There's also a detailed section that brings together a wide range of things for budget managers to think about specifically. So really it's about thinking strategically and planning and delivering a procurement process in a way that's proportionate to the scale or the complexity of a particular contract, but captures things like local purchasing and social value, ethical procurement, got sustainability and climate change, you know, of course linking into the Council's climate change strategy, and indeed any other related Council policy or strategy that might come along during the life of this policy that could influence budget managers' considerations when they're undertaking a purchase. So there's of course a lot of detail in the policy itself, but really the bottom line is that we want to have something in place that guides officers in making the right decisions when spending what's ultimately taxpayers' money, and help teams to continue to deliver high quality services through the external market whilst ensuring that value for money. So the recommendation in the report is for the Council to adopt the new procurement policy. Of course, happy to take any questions for you, Leader.
Okay, thanks, James, and thanks for all the hard work that's gone into putting the policy together. Do we have any questions? Councillor Barker.
Thank you, Leader. Thank you, James. Yes, a very thorough report. There were a couple of mentions in there about EU legislation, which I wasn't particularly sure is still going to be relevant in the future, but I presume, you know, working up to the end of the year, they'd have to be in anyway, so I presume that's why they were left in. My only concern about it is the difficulty in evaluating climate change and sustainability and localism in procurement. And I wonder if there's some role there that councillors might play in the future to say how you value a financial aspect against the benefits of to climate change and to localism. But it's all there in there, and it gives us the scope to do that in the future. But I think that's something we want to be mindful of. But thank you for the report. It's very good.
Thanks, James. Do you want to just comment on those two elements?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of EU, then as you've rightly said, of course, at the moment, that's still a thing that we need to consider. Of course, we're no doubt keeping close eyes on the situation as it moves and changes. And there are a few changes in the rules that we have to follow in terms of advertising procurement opportunities across the country. That's sort of automated and picked up through our electronic procurement portal that we have. So those changes that have already been made have already been dealt with, but it's there to I think what the policy is trying to do is say that if there are any other external regulations that we have to follow, whether it be EU or otherwise, then we have to consider that in any process that we undertake. In terms of evaluations, as you say, yeah, we've got sections in there around climate change and sustainability and ethical procurement and social value and localism for people, when they're thinking about the process up front and understanding what the outcomes are from any given process, to be able to tailor the procurement that delivers that particular outcome, you know, and that's whether it be climate change against cost or any, there's always a quality cost balance in any process. It's about understanding what is the right approach for that particular process and running with it. So it's about having all options on the table, I suppose, to be able to then understand what's the best option and take it forward. And that's the approach we've tried to get through in this policy.
Thank you, James, for that. I think, you know, in the round, this is a framework, a very useful and helpful framework in terms of the governance and the operation of procurement. Clearly, we are going to be extremely mindful of our obligations around climate change following our declaration at the last full council meeting, and likewise very conscious of our responsibilities to our local suppliers where that is appropriate and where that still secures value for money for as James points out, taxpayers' money, of which we are just the custodians in seeking to deliver the best value outcomes for them, and particularly in light of recovery and COVID 19, that's also an important consideration. Are there any other questions or queries on the procurement policy? If there are not, then I would like to propose the recommendation outlined in the report that the council adopts the procurement policy. I've got Councillor Faulkner seconding. All in favour? Okay, I can see that is unanimous from all present. Thank you very much. Thank you, James. Okay. Next up is item number 7, which is the apprenticeship update, September 2020 reporting. So I'll pause just for a moment between Linda McDonald.
Good evening.
Good evening, Linda. We are on item number 7, so please proceed.
We have to publish our progress towards meeting the government's apprenticeship target at the end of September. You'll see from the report this year that in 2019-20 we've made good progress towards that in achieving 7 new apprentice starts. We review all the vacancies as they arise and consider whether or not we can create an apprenticeship from them. And in doing so, we've been able to commence a couple of apprenticeships in some new areas, one being revenues and benefits level 4 and another one being level 3 in building consultancy. And we've engaged 2 new training providers in doing that also. We have met some challenges in reaching the targets, as has been outlined in the report, which is similar to other public sector organisations, that in this year we have done well. And I think our statement that we'll be publishing alongside our achievement reflects that. So it's really for approval of that, please.
Thank you very much, Linda, and thank you for the work in putting it together, and indeed the work of all the officers in ensuring that the maximum number of apprenticeship opportunities are brought to the fore. Does anybody have any questions or queries they'd like to raise on the reporting and the accompanying statement? No. Okay. Well, it's obviously very pleasing that we have been able to add these new apprenticeship roles. And I think would again reaffirm our commitment to continue to seek to do so in the future. Again, potentially entering a period of economic uncertainty, which could often affect those for whom an apprenticeship may be an appropriate and helpful way forward. So again, I think we have certainly, if not a statutory duty to report on this, a moral duty to work very hard in this area as well. Okay, so the recommendation is as outlined in the report under section 11, so that's to include the narrative in the reporting as outlined in appendix 2. So I will move that recommendation. Do I have a seconder for that? Councillor Allen, thank you very much. All in favour of that? It is unanimous from the cabinet members voting. Okay, that's great. Thank you. And thank you very much, Linda.
Thank you.
Okay. So we are on to item number 8, which is the quarter one revenue and capital outturn 2020-21. And again, I'll pause whilst Lisa Turner is brought in to present the report.
Good evening.
Good evening, Lisa.
Thank you.
We are on item 8, so away you go.
Okay, thank you. I've got the presentation, which I will share. So this is the financial outturn quarter one for the current financial year. And the report covers the forecast financial outturn for quarter one, covering revenue budget, capital programme, and also treasury and risk management in the normal way. Start by looking at the revenue budget. The report, as you can see on the screen, presents underlying forecast net pressures of 2.2 million, largely arising due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Like all local authorities, the council has seen significant increased cost pressures, but more significantly, income losses arising due to the pandemic. However, after taking into account additional government financial support towards COVID-19, this overall forecast net pressure reduces to around 94,000. The report does, however, highlight the expectation of increased volatility within the forecast this year, and provide some sensitivity analysis against that figure at paragraph 2.3. The most significant pressures are detailed within paragraph 4.2 of the report, and a full schedule of forecast variances are outlined at appendix A in the normal manner. Bearing in mind the extent of the financial pressures, overall, this is a very positive position, although still very early in the year, of course. It demonstrates that the authority has been resilient and able to respond to, of course, underpinning the budget at unprecedented period of funding reductions to public spending. And also the authority has responded positively to the challenge and impact of COVID-19. It demonstrates that budget holders are examining and challenging their spending throughout the year, and that the council's underlying financial position is robust and resilient. Regards to the capital programme, paragraph 6.1 of the report sets out our progress against a programme of 5.9 million. A number of projects are taking place over several years, and some of the timelines have been impacted as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, but overall the programme is in line with the approved budget. Regards to Treasury and Risk Management, which are covered in sections 5 and 8 of the report respectively, Investments at the end of the quarter stood at just over $41 million, with the full schedule attached at Appendix B to the report. Average returns were above the base rate and in line with benchmarks during the quarter. The report does, however, continue to highlight the risk associated with the timing of committed capital receipts towards debt repayment and the potential impact on the budget. Borrowing remains largely the same at around $11.1 million. And overall, the treasury management activities have been in line with the treasury management strategy approved earlier in the year. With regards to risk management, Appendix C sets out in some detail the strategic and corporate risks facing the authority. This has undergone a substantial update in light of current events, and it outlines how these risks are being managed by the authority. In summary, therefore, at this very early stage of the year, it does continue to be overall a very positive position, and it provides a strong foundation to enable the council to deliver its objectives moving forward. In terms of the recommendations, the report recommends noting the financial position at quarter one for 2021 in relation to the revenue and capital budget, together with the degree of financial uncertainty that exists due to the COVID-19 pandemic. To note the latest position in respect to the council's investments and borrowing, and to note the corporate and strategic risks, together with the actions being taken to manage things. That's the key points within the report, Lead. I'm happy to take any questions through you.
Thank you very much indeed, Lisa, for the report and also the work in putting together the update, and also obviously all the hard work behind the scenes in keeping a tight control on the numbers themselves. Are there any questions or comments on the outturn report? Obviously, we have been through this report in some considerable detail in a series of previous meetings, but if there's anything anybody would like to query or raise now, please do so. Okay. I think it's fair to say that the position as it currently stands, as Lisa indicated, is relatively pleasing given the degree of turmoil effectively that the whole country has been through. In great part due to the financial or the strength of the previous financial management of the authority and our prudent approach to funds has obviously left us in a strong position. And also I'd like to sort of formally place on record my thanks to the government, to Robert Jenrick from OHCRG, the Secretary of State, to the Treasury and all involved, because as you can see, in terms of the central government funding that's been provided up till now, that is effectively largely looking to balance our budget. I think that's worthy of comment, as it's an important issue. There is a considerable amount of volatility through the rest of the year, and I know that everybody is obviously looking at their budget and cost and income lines very closely going forward, and will continue to do so. And obviously, we'll look to take action as required for the rest of the year. And similarly, it's obviously very pleasing to see the inclusion of the various COVID-related risks within the risk management section of the report. Okay, so the recommendation as outlined by Lisa is that we note the financial position in terms of income, only revenue and capital. We note the position in terms of investments and borrowing, and that we note the risks. So Are all members content that we note the content of the report and the recommendations? Okay, duly noted. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed, Lisa, for the presentation.
Thank you and good evening.
Okay, we are on to item number 9, which is the Corporate Plan Performance Report, 2020-21, quarter one. James, on two of his free terms.
Thanks again, Leader. So, yes, this is the Corporate Plan Performance Report, looking at the Council's progress towards achieving its objectives for the first quarter of this financial year. So I'll just provide a very quick summary of the headline figures and the key points. As I hope you can see from the report that's been circulated, the numbers suggest that overall the corporate performance continues to be very positive in challenging times, as we've just talked about. So to summarise, each target has been graded using the usual red, amber, green system of ratings and ranked accordingly, depends on the progress of each individual indicator. And following an appraisal of the impact of the pandemic on the corporate plan, the analysis of the review targets is showing that out of the 109 targets that we have in total, there are 68 that have been marked as green. There are just 4 that have been highlighted as amber and just 3 that have been highlighted as red. There are 24 that are not yet due to be reported and will, of course, become live as we go through the rest of this financial year. And there are 8 that have been deferred and 2 further that have been deleted. So if we look purely at the 75 live targets, this equates to the council being at 90.67% green overall, just 5.33% amber. So of course follows that it's just 4% red. Just to provide a bit of further breakdown on that, the table you can see on page 6 of the main report, that shows how those percentages break down across the council's 3 corporate priorities, as well as the 5 cabinet portfolios, really just to provide, I think, a useful at-a-glance summary of the council's latest position. Those few targets that I've referred to as amber or red, they are all detailed in full in section 5.5 of the main report, which you can see started on page 7. And that section just includes some narrative to provide some context around the situation with each of those individual indicators. Appendix 1 does include comprehensive data on all the indicators in the corporate plan, which of course underpins the monitoring of the performance. And similarly, Appendix 2 and 3 shows the results of the last 2 rounds of benchmarking that we've done with other similar councils that we've recently undertaken. So that's a summary of the main report. As I mentioned at the outset, overall, the numbers would suggest that the council continues to be in a very good position in terms of its corporate performance, with the vast majority of targets being on track to be achieved as planned. Recommendation in the report is simply to consider the council's performances at the end of the quarter one. And with that, I'll pass back to you, Leader, for any questions.
Thank you very much indeed, James. Again, as per the last item, this is an item that we have been through in some detail prior to now. But if anybody has any questions or queries. Yeah, okay, it's obviously worth noting that we did reset a number of the targets that were affected by COVID-19 in such a way that would have made the reporting of them completely disproportionate, but then likewise in terms of the ambers and reds within the report, those are largely COVID related as well, but again, as with the financial outturn, again, clearly a forensic and close eye will be placed on the remainder of the corporate plan targets for the rest of the year. So the recommendation, unless anybody else has any questions, is to consider the performance in the first quarter in terms of achieving the council of corporate priorities. Is everybody happy to consider and note those? Yep. Okay, thank you. Duly noted. James, thank you very much indeed. See you in a bit. Okay, we are on to item number 10, and that is the Local Government and Social Care Ombudsman Annual Review Letter 2020. Over to Andrea.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Leader. The report presents the annual review letter from the Ombudsman for the financial year ending March 2020. A copy of the letter is included at Appendix 1 of the report with a summary of the complaints the Ombudsman has received about the Borough Council at Appendix 2. A total of 8 complaints or inquiries were received by the Ombudsman during the financial year, and 5 decisions were made during that period. 2 referred back for local resolution and 3 were closed after initial inquiries. One point of clarification, one complaint received by the Ombudsman about the Borough Council has been classified as adult and social care. Under the Ombudsman's categories for classification, which is detailed on their website, the subject matter would have been disabled facilities grants. As always, the information held by the Ombudsman does not always align with that held by the Council. For example, the Council may have dealt with a report with a complaint or an inquiry during one financial year, and then the Ombudsman may have received it the following financial year. The report includes reference to the Ombudsman suspending all casework activity due to the pandemic and restarting casework at the end of June 2020. In addition to the Council developing a policy line during this period, reserving the right to respond to some complaints where information has already been issued and publicised. Section 4.5 of the report shows the number of formal complaints received by the authority within the year and how each complaint has progressed through the complaints procedure. A total of 44 complaints were received, a very small increase on the number of complaints received from the previous year, which was 42. Performance information is provided at paragraph 4.6 of the report, and Appendix 3 gives a detailed breakdown of the formal complaints received per local authority where that information has been provided. You'll notice that the LG Inform suspended data collection for quarter two, and the LG Inform is a non-mandatory benchmarking service, and unfortunately this means that not everybody participates every quarter. I'll pass back to you, Chair, for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Andrea, and obviously looking at the available benchmarking in the report. Obviously it shows that indeed, if you look back at previous reports, a theme that the incidents rates within our borough are low, which is obviously very positive in terms of the outcome of the service that we deliver, and also it's interesting to benchmark ourselves against other local authorities. And placed very positively. Does anybody have any questions or comments on that? Okay, so the recommendation is that local government annual review letter be received and received a motion. Okay, lovely, thank you very much. Right, we are on to item number 11 and the COVID-19 emergency planning update for September and June.
So as you'll notice, the early part of this year, the Council and everyone involved has been working hard on the response to the ongoing COVID-19 situation and the associated recovery from that. And these update reports provide the latest position in relation to the local response within the borough, which is, of course, an ongoing information on the social services following any of the matters previously. Now we're familiar with the scorecard type of approach that we've continued to use and the four broad themes that we've outlined, which help us to focus our review. But all the details of the latest ones across those four themes are somewhere on the table, page 6 of the report, just to provide a focal point. So four themes to point out the key changes or additions since the previous monthly report. People processed with the ongoing updates on the COVID-related absence levels. And as you know, there was the recent success in meetings with the full council for the first time using Zoom. And also a key point to note is that the survey designed to explore staff experiences of the lockdown and home working to help officers tailor things moving forward. That recently the outcomes are being reviewed and being communicated to Cornwall to be able to pick those responses. On service change and communication, a key change from the last month is the full council approval relating to the reopening of the three leisure centres in the borough. In terms of communications, the council, of course, continues to share key national and local communications towards media channels, including messages from key organisations to ensure that all these voices are being shared widely as possible. So on community and partners, particular focus of the work in recent days and weeks has continued to be the engagement with all the relevant partners in relation to Shelburne and Anglesey, Horning and Low and Eastern Park areas of the borough. The testing campaigns focusing on this area, so staff and council, the health authority and ourselves to better understand level of infection in the communities. The summary there of the walk-in and door-to-door testing recently undertaken up to the time of writing, but I mentioned that the response is, of course, an ongoing picture and various testing measures in those areas as we move forward. And finally, on finances, we've got the usual update there on all the pension rates that continue to be administered by the authority. And as you can see, there's a significant amount of support given there to residents and businesses from within. So some of the responses emerged. But we thought it's important to look at the recovery phase and how the economy rebuilds following any emergency. So the Venn diagram we've included on page 11, that shows a summary of the various recovery activities and channels that are available at a national level through the county or into ward level. And then, of course, being a local report, the framework shown labels on the following pages provides a drill down to the people on that. And as you can see, there's a significant number of elements and work streams that will contribute to the local recovery from an economic and social perspective. So there's detail provided on each of those recovery schemes and initiatives, and also a link back to how each of those aspects contributes to the four balanced scorecard themes that we touched on at the start, noting that in reality they may contribute to more than one theme in some capacity. So that's a summary of the report. It's clear that there's a significant amount of work happening from across the area in relation to the response and the recovery phases of the emergency. And the recommendation there is simply to note the date detailed within the report, and with that I'll hand back to you, Ian.
Thank you very much indeed, James. Does anybody have any questions or comments they would like to make? Okay. Councillor Peters.
Thank you. I think it's worth mentioning, as you've done earlier today, Leader, thanks for the efforts that staff are putting in for the project, and the environmental health team in particular, who are working exceptionally hard and are setting an example in terms of communication and being able to support community. It's a challenging day by day, and they have been relentless in their approach. So I'd like that to be recorded with your agreement, Leader.
Absolutely, I wholeheartedly agree. And from personal experience and from the experience of everybody here and everybody, I'm sure all across the council, there is an incredible amount of hard work and for everyone's hard work and continuing efforts. I'm very pleased to include the recovery aspect of the situation. So clearly the report identifies what we are overseeing as a cabinet in terms of supporting the area and local businesses recover. And that will continue to be an area of focus as we move forward. In terms of current area of interest that you mentioned, James, it's working extremely well with all the various stakeholders in the area, so the County Council, in terms of their lead role as the public health authority, but also the input we've had from various members of the community in helping to get messages across the ways in which we can improve and refine that messaging. Obviously, there are lots of things still ongoing in that respect, and have made a number of steps of progress in terms of the infection rate within those affected urban wards. It's obviously quite disappointing to the extent that what improvements are being seen to be made. We have further issues of concern, so obviously the numbers have lowered and raised, which has meant continued and very detailed focus from all of us. Again, we will continue to work with our stakeholders in finding the messages, but again, I would like to publicly encourage everybody clearly to comply with new law in terms of groups of six. It is very, very important if we wish to avoid any further more draconian action taking place within our borough. It is incumbent upon everybody to follow the rules. So the rules of six, the things we all should be going about and doing already, and not to become complacent about those as well. So hygiene, appropriate social distancing, and obviously wearing the masks where it is appropriate and required. We can do as much as we can do as a local authority in terms of having support, but ultimately it is the responsibility of our residents to follow the rules. Those rules are in place for a reason, and we don't want to see return to any sort of lockdown. We've seen what that can do. We've seen the results of that. This can not anywhere that we all want to be. So I'm just encourage everybody to follow the rules and follow the guidance, in particular, obviously the extra guidance that we have put together with the County Council around the affected wards in the area of interest. So that more details are available on the County Council website and through our various social media channels. So unless anybody has any questions, the points of recommendation is that we note the updated information details within the report. Is everybody content that we note that? Okay. Thank you very much indeed, James, for the report and for all your hard work in this area.
Thanks all.
closing new hospitals and new library recycling centres, and I move that in accordance with Section 100A4 of the Local Government Act 1972 that press and public be excluded from the remaining meeting, that is likely in view of the nature of the business to be transacted at the nature of the scene, that there would be disclosed information to find under the paragraph of Part 1 Schedule 12 of the Act, indicated in brackets before the item number on the agenda, which is the review of the council's new library recycling centres.